Okay, last case for argument is Mamadoff versus Ashcroft, Mr. Block.
May it please your court, good morning, your honors. I'm attorney Harold Block from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I represent the Mamadoff family. The Mamadoffs had filed for asylum. They're from Turkmenistan. They filed on the basis of the fact that the husband's mother was Jewish, and that over the course of time, this Jewish connection became known to various people in Turkmenistan and various officials, and as a result of that, that both Mr. Mamadoff, as well as his wife, lost their job positions in ways in which made it very clear why they lost them. And subsequently, Mrs. Mamadoff experienced an event in a store where she was physically assaulted by neighbors in their neighborhood who had become aware of this. And also, Mr. Mamadoff testified about an incident where he was seriously physically injured and did require medical treatment. The immigration judge concluded that he felt, and I'll use his terminology because I'm not certain, it's somewhat confusing to me. He says that he believes that the parties exaggerated their facts and tried to portray their claim in a stark and harsh manner. And then after concluding that, went on to go on the record speculating other reasons why perhaps the parties lost their job positions. The government has argued, we have argued in our brief, that we believe that the immigration judge violated his requirements in terms of the fact that he ruled as if he were finding the testimony not credible, but he never really indicated that it wasn't credible. And we argued that he didn't.
Did you read his opinion as accepting, in the final analysis, Mr. Mamadoff's Jewish identity?
You know, I'm somewhat confused by that. I don't believe that he necessarily accepted it, but he never really said unequivocally that he didn't accept it. What he said was that he believes that regardless of whether he was connected with a Jewish profile, that that fact would not necessarily have become known under the circumstances to precipitate mistreatment. I believe that the testimony of the parties does establish the nexus here, and quite frankly, as I see the case, the government, in looking at how they would respond to this, appears in their briefs to indicate that they also don't believe the judge made a finding of lack of credibility.
Right, I'm just trying to nail this down because if it seems to me overall he is willing to accept the fact that Mr. Mamadoff, I'm going to call it Jewish identity because obviously it's a complicated situation, and I think he also believes that people knew that, but I don't know that he sees a connection between being Jewish and this, these experiences, the loss of job, the problems his wife had, et cetera.
It seems to me you can't have it both ways. If he found the testimony essentially credible and didn't rule that it wasn't credible, but sort of equivocated by saying it was exaggerated, then clearly the testimony under the law of the respondents should be considered to be true and should constitute evidence. But he didn't really want to do that, it seems to me. And so I don't know how you can have it both ways. If he found they weren't credible, then clearly he should have made sufficient findings that would have corroborated that position. Clearly he didn't do that. So it seems to me that the government's position on this is sort of a fence-sitting position where, well, he doesn't have to really provide any kind of detailed analysis because he never really found they weren't credible. On the other hand, I don't know how else you can characterize some of his comments. In the judge's opinion, he says the testimony does not sound credible. I'm not sure. Does that mean that he's finding it's not credible? I don't know that. And then he says, again, that he believes the parties exaggerated their facts. Now, if it's a fact, I don't know how you exaggerate it. If it's a conclusion, yes, understandably that can be. But how can you possibly exaggerate a fact? And then he goes on to try in some way to explain his position on this by discussing with very little attention some of the other supporting documentation. There was an awful lot of corroborating documentation that was submitted to the court on this matter, including affidavits from 7 other individuals from Turkmenistan who had previously been granted asylum. He doesn't seem to find that that has any corroborative value.
What was the basis for their asylum?
There were a variety of them, but there were 3 affiants who had mixed cultural marriages, 3 of them. 2 of them were Armenian Christians who married a Turkic Muslim, and one of them was an ethnically Jewish woman who married a Turkic Muslim. And all 3 of them, in their affidavits, experienced similar situations. The other affiants were not providing affidavits for support of the mixed marriage problem. They were providing their affidavits for providing evidence as to how the government responds to minorities in Turkmenistan. And so those things were pretty much ignored, as was an opinion from Professor Raju Thomas from Marquette University, who commented most specifically on mixed marriages and who concluded that he felt that the 2 most serious mixed marriage situations in Turkmenistan, which is overwhelmingly Muslim and which actually has its own new religion developed by the dictator, that overwhelmingly the 2 people who were in the biggest problem were the Armenian Christian Muslim marriages or the Jewish Muslim marriages. And so the judge, I thought, really searched for ways in which he could somehow discredit in some fashion without finding a lack of credibility, that it was sufficient to meet the standard. He talks about the issue about a synagogue. Well, the testimony of Mr. Mamadov never was that there were any synagogues in Turkmenistan. There are no synagogues in Turkmenistan. The synagogue, as he referred to it, was a home that was utilized as such for religious prayer and observance of religious holidays by a person who he referred to as a rabbi. Whether he was technically a rabbi or not, I don't know. But Muslims frequently refer to people who don't necessarily have extensive clerical training as imams. It's a fairly common proposition to characterize these people who seem to know the tenets of the religion and who seem to be able to appropriately intermix with that.
So Mr. Mamadov wasn't using the word synagogue. Was he testifying through a translator, or was he testifying?
Yeah, he was testifying through a translator, so frankly, I don't know what he said.
But the transcript will show that he was talking about the place where he went to worship.
Exactly. I mean, but the judge seemed to attach a lot of significance to this in terms of, quote, exaggerating the facts. He used that as an illustration of how he exaggerated the facts. I just think that if there's no finding of lack of credibility, then clearly the severity of the mistreatment rises to the level of persecution because, among other things, Mr. Mamadov testified that when he was beaten, he suffered a concussion, several broken ribs, as well as lacerations on his scalp that were stitched up by a nurse. So on the basis of those, Your Honors, I believe that the judge fell far short of what he was required to do under the analysis, and that at the very least, this case should go back for a proper evaluation and probably a purview in view of current conditions, which have considerably worsened.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Block. Ms. Schwartz?
Good morning, Your Honors. Nora Osterly Schwartz for Respondent John Ashcroft. The issue here is not credibility. The issue here, the immigration judge was willing to believe that the events occurred as they did.
Let me ask you, by the way, there are handwritten changes in his opinion. Who put them there?
Normally what happens is the transcriber transcribes it differently than the immigration judge said it, and those are the changes he makes when he sees the written version. It's an oral decision that he renders.
So there are his changes.
Yes, that would be the normal course of business. I don't know about this one particularly, but usually he makes the changes by hand.
You say usually, but if you look at the bottom of page 10 of his opinion, it says it's unclear that the attack was based solely or even partially on the fact that the male response mother possessed a Jewish nationality. Well, that's actually a change in the holding.
Yes.
So can we be confident that it was made by the immigration judge rather than by someone else?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think counsel would agree that it was consistent with what the immigration judge said even after he rendered his decision. But again, the question is, he's not questioning the credibility.
Pretty unprofessional, isn't it, to have an opinion with handwritten changes in it?
Absolutely, Your Honor. But it doesn't render
the opinion. You don't have a word processing program that's actually...
No, Your Honor, these are oral decisions.
Yeah, but it got printed. We're not listening to a tape. I mean, I think Judge Posner's point is, at some point this gets reduced to something that shows up in a typewritten form in the brief, and why didn't it get fixed somewhere along the way?
The way it's done, Your Honor, is that it's all... tapes, and I don't attend an immigration hearing, but Mr. Block can correct me if I'm wrong. They are everything is recorded, and then when an appeal is noted, it's the record is transcribed by a reporter in another part of the country.
And this could have happened long after July 28, 2000, that he goes through and makes these emendations?
It's possible, yes, Your Honor. And then, but it's not a word processing.
Really? That's unbelievable.
You're absolutely right, Your Honor, and I had never focused on that, but it doesn't...
I mean, that means that his opinion was actually...
Altered
opinion
after.
The opinion was altered after the appeal was filed?
Well, it wasn't...
Don't they lose jurisdiction or something?
No, Your Honor, because you lose jurisdiction because petitioner hasn't challenged it. He was presented with the immigration judge's decision when he was preparing his appeal. It doesn't... The government...
Well, when we take appeals from the district court, the district judge is not allowed to modify his decision after the appeal is filed.
But the district court comes directly here. There's an intervening authority between the immigration judge and the appellate court. If petitioner felt that it materially changed the outcome of the decision, which the government submits it does not, then his...
So this was altered before the the Board of Immigration Appeals.
Yes, this was part of the record. This was
right.
What petitioner
so,
was
okay.
given when he prepared his appeal. If he felt that it altered the...
So how much time... So this, the day July 28, 2000, is this the date of the original opinion or the date when he altered...
It was the date the decision was rendered, then the hearing was transcribed.
So we don't even know when he altered the opinion.
I think the record would show that it would have been, well, whenever the record was sent to petitioner. The administrative record was prepared, typed, and sent to petitioner, which was before he presented his arguments and his appeal to the board. He noted his appeal and then he prepared his brief when he received the transcript. At that point, if he felt there was a material change, it was his point to it was his responsibility to challenge it, and he has not and he's waived it by not challenging it below. And with all due respect, Your Honor, can't raise it for him.
Does that mean that when he was that when did Mamadov when he prepared his brief on appeal to the Board of Immigration Appeals. Did he have the
yes.
altered document?
Yes, Your Honor. We were both, yes.
Going back to this oral opinion, though, of the immigration judge, I actually find it very hard to follow because, you say he accepts the Jewish identity. You say that he accepts that these various things happened, and at one point, you know, I see him referring to the attack, which I assume means that he accepts the idea that there was this attack in May of 1995, but his use of the testimony is really quite odd. If you go back and look at what, for example, Mr. Ferriance was testifying, Mr. Ferriance is saying that he's Jewish, not that anything happened years later, and the immigration judge doesn't really seem to be paying attention to who was testifying for what purpose.
Well, Mr. Ferriance, again, he doesn't doubt that he's Jewish. He accepts that.
No, but I'm saying the immigration judge said, hey, you know, what's the use of Mr. Ferriance's testimony for these things that happened in 1995 when that wasn't what Mr. Farians was referring to. He just said he was personally familiar with the fact that Ahmed is Jewish and that this creates a substantial problem. Now, if Mr. Farians was never trying to say the things the immigration judge criticizes him for, isn't that a serious problem with this opinion?
Well, he also testified that these things did happen.
No, I don't know that he did that. He just said it's being Jewish is a serious problem for you in Turkmenistan. That's not to say that something happened to you on January 20th or May 1995 or anything else.
Except he didn't know what the immigration judge was saying is he didn't know. Farians had no way of knowing that these things happened to petitioners.
And Farians never said that he knew that. That's the problem. The immigration judge is attributing to Farians things that he never said and then saying, well, you must be unreliable for saying these things that you never said.
Granted, Your Honor, but the issue here, again, he's not questioning that these things happened. What he
the question is the coherence of the intelligibility and the sort of elementary rationality of the decision. Now, for example, where did he get the idea that this was an apartment?
Because the petitioner testified to that.
I thought he said house or home.
He also said apartment. So again, you can attribute it to translation, but he said both. Therefore, the immigration
judge. What do you mean he said both?
He said at one point in the testimony it was his home. That doesn't mean it can't be an apartment.
No, of course it doesn't mean it can't be an apartment. Where's the testimony that it was an apartment?
It is in the record. I remember seeing it. I can't point to you directly right now, and I think Mr. Block would agree.
Did you say that in your brief?
I believe so. But the issue was, here again, the immigration judge wasn't contesting the use of the term house, home, apartment, or
yes,
synagogue.
Yes, of course he was.
Oh, Your Honor, no, with all due respect.
Because he thought that because it was an apartment, no one would know that he was Jewish. Right?
What he questioned was, nobody saw him in the apartment. Somebody saw him on the street in the neighborhood. So it wasn't whether it was a synagogue or not. It was what the immigration judge questioned was, why, if someone saw you in the neighborhood, would he immediately assume you had been to that apartment in that building?
Well, that's why it's important whether it's an apartment or a freestanding building.
But whether it's an apartment or a freestanding building, he wasn't seen leaving the building. He wasn't seen in the building. He was seen on the street in the neighborhood. And from that, petitioner wants the court to reach the find that the evidence compels that as a result of being seen in the neighborhood outside this residence, the person who saw him immediately assumed he had been to that place for that purpose and then reported it.
No, but clearly you can see the difference. If someone goes into an apartment house, you don't know what apartment he's going into, right? So that presumably is why the immigration judge thought that it was significant that it was an apartment.
Your Honor, I'm happy to submit the record page of the site. If you want it now, we can take the time to look for it. I would prefer to be allowed to discuss the merits of the case,
Well, we think this is part of the merits.
Okay,
right?
Then let's go through it.
When he tried to explain why, and this all relates to this question you just posed to us, when he asked the petitioner to explain why anybody would know that there was a, quote, synagogue, close quote, he said people were just aware of the fact that there was a place where Jews were gathering. Wasn't that his response?
I don't remember that particular part of the transcript.
Well, I'm reading from part of the transcript. So
well, then you must be right. But the point is, if you look at the context, first of all, you have his story changed from his asylum application to his testimony. The basic tenet of his testimony is, I was persecuted because I was Jewish and in a mixed marriage. However, at the same time that he claimed he was being fired, his parents, who were, his father was Turkmen, his mother was Jewish, prominent medical people in a small society, a small medical community, He said everybody knew it was a mixed marriage. Everybody knew my mother was Jewish. Yet his father continued until his death in 1994 to continue in his prominent position at the university and in the medical community. And his mother, there was no evidence that there was any restriction on her ability to practice medicine. This is at the same time, we're talking through 1994, he claimed he was fired in 1990 and 1994 because he was Jewish in a mixed marriage. Well, that doesn't make sense. It's not his testimony, the credibility that was doubted. The immigration judge believed that he was fired. He did not believe that it was on account of his being Jewish, because his parents were also Jewish. Well, in a mixed marriage, his mother was Jewish. Nothing ever happened to them. So the immigration judge looked for another reason. The record indicates hospitals were being closed, and the immigration judge did say it could have been there was no need for his services at that time. There is an alternate conclusion. Therefore, the record, the evidence, does not compel the conclusion that it was on account of the fact that he was the son of a Jewish woman who was not herself persecuted in the same community and married to a non-Jew. So we're looking at the entire context. Why would his parents not suffer, who were well-known and they were known to be in a mixed marriage, whereas he was? The same thing with his wife. She was not fired for another 2 years. She says it was on account of the fact that she was married to a Jew. However, she's a psychiatrist who treated drug addicts. They were cutting back at hospitals.
Did the immigration judge consider the affidavits, the 7 affidavits? Did he make reference to that in his...
Yes, he did. He did refer to them, but he did not find that the evidence compelled the finding that the termination was on account of his religion. The attack, his own testimony is inconsistent on that, and it doesn't establish that it was on account of. He says, two people attacked me. The immigration judge believed that there was an attack. He did not believe that it was on account of the fact that Mamadov is Jewish. He also didn't believe that they said, is your name Mamadov? And he said yes, and then they beat him up. But the thing is, Mamadov is not a Jewish name. He has no documents, nothing that indicates that he is Jewish. So the reason that he has no reason for why people would attack him at night, and he still doesn't know.
Well, wait a minute. The administrative, you say that the Jews met in secret in this apartment or whatever it was, but the judge, is that the idea that he had concealed his being Jewish or what?
It wasn't a question of concealing. It was a question of there was no need to be open about it. Even in our society, where hopefully there's not a lot of discrimination for religion, you don't go and announce when you're applying for a job and when you're in a job, this is my religion, these are my beliefs. It's just not necessarily part of the workplace.
So you're saying the people in Turkmenistan didn't know he was Jewish. Is that what you're saying?
It hasn't been... Well, I don't know, Your Honor. See, the testimony is twofold, and it's inconsistent. He says, on the one hand, my parents were prominent. Everyone knew my mother was Jewish, so I've suffered all my life because people knew I was Jewish. And then he said, and he also says, I was denied an ideal posting because I was Jewish. And then he says, nobody knew I was Jewish, and when they found out, I was fired. So the evidence doesn't compel a conclusion one way or the other, and that is petitioner's burden to tell a consistent, detailed story. Again, the immigration judge
made... Let me ask you another question about this practice of the oral opinion. How does the alien find out what is in the oral opinion? Is it read in his presence?
It's not read, Your Honor. It's rendered orally. And the reason is...
Well, does he listen to it?
One would hope so. And Mr. Block was there, and he listened to it.
Was Mamadov there?
Yes.
Was it translated for him?
Yes, there was an interpreter who translated.
So he did hear it.
And then the process is he hears it. It's not transcribed at the point, but he hears it orally.
Yes.
And that's why it's not always a vision of clarity. He doesn't have the luxury of time or 3 law clerks to write it for him. He says it, and this is his opinion, his summation at the end. But what's very clear in here is he'll say, okay, well, I'll find him credible, but this is where he fails. I do not...
That's okay. You've made your argument.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Your Honor. Shall I keep looking for the apartment
site? Mr. Block, how much time does he have?
I think the judge would put her finger on one of the problems in this decision right off the bat. the mischaracterization of what was indicated in the affidavit of Leif Turjans. There were six other affidavits. Judge didn't refer to any of them. He only referred to the one that he thought may have created a problem for this gentleman. Frankly, again, I don't see how the judge's opinion and the government's position can hide on the fact that there was no finding of lack of credibility, and yet then not accept the proposition that the testimony of the respondents is presumed to be true. And if it's presumed to be true, there's ample testimony there as to the nexus between the Jewish connection and the mistreatment. And so I think that it's very clear that the government can't have it both ways. And frankly, with all the other materials, the extensive assortment of human rights, country condition reports.
So do you have any comment on the apartment issue?
No. Frankly, here's the problem. As an attorney that practices in these things, I've got a Russian translator there. I don't speak Russian. I don't know what the term was when it was given. The translator gives a term. Sometimes it's right on. Sometimes they kind of reevaluate what they said. And so, frankly, I don't know whether he referred to it as a home or an apartment or both. And
well, I can tell you, I mean, in your opponent's brief, there's a citation to three pages, two of which are the immigration judge opinion.
Yeah.
The only page that isn't the immigration judge opinion is this page 157, which I was just looking at, and it's really 156 and 157, where he's talking about one of my coworkers saw me when I was in the synagogue before that. I couldn't hide it. Question, well, I didn't think there was a synagogue in your city. Answer, well, I'm just calling this place synagogue. It was not really a synagogue. It was a kind of illegal place for everybody in his house. In everybody's house, we were gathering there. There were just a few Jewish families. Then they go on to talk about whether it was a rabbi, and this person there saw you too. No, he was guarding not far from that house. The term house is the only term that's used, at least on this cited page. Now, I certainly can't say I'll flip through this whole thing, but
yeah.
The term house right there.
I understand. And quite frankly, I understand that it's a factor, but again, it seems to me we're in some respects losing the forest for the trees here, because quite frankly, I don't see how the government can have it both ways. I just don't see. I think the judge tried to skirt the problem of finding a lack of credibility and finding a cogent reason for it. And so he uses these terms.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Block.
Yes,
the time has expired. He's run over. Thank you to both counsel. Case to be taken under advisement. Court will be stand in recess.